So again, thank you for having us, for coming to this evening. My name is Jacques Ferdinand. I've worked in state prisons for 22 years, mostly with life sentence prisoners that are also okay. Let's do a remote. How's this? Could be better, no? I'm not the loudest guy on the block. Testing, 1, 2, 3. How is it in the back? So-so? Okay, I'll speak a little louder too. So working mostly with life sentence prisoners with parole, meaning you get to go to the parole board who at some point decides you're ready to go home. And also the same moniker as violent offenders, of which we have 35,000 in California alone. Mainly because none of them paroled for 14 years straight. It's a different story, we'll get into that maybe. We started out somewhat naive, thinking, well, these guys have time, we have meditation instructions, it'll be like a monastery. It quickly turned out it was smarter to ask what is needed than to bring our ideology. I'd like to introduce to you Robin Guillen. Robin and I worked in prison together for a long time, I'd say about 20 years almost. But I went home in the evening and he stayed because he was a prisoner. And so Robin has a great many other identities. One among them is Native American. And I've asked Robin to play a song for us. I guess you don't need a microphone, do you?
No.
You want to say anything? You want to play the song?
I'd like to speak and
please
possibly introduce myself.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Robin Peacemaker Guillen. I represent the Comanche and Chippewa tribe. And it is an honor and a privilege for me to be standing as a free human being among you. Later on, I will be sharing some of the details of my journey, my path. For now, I will offer a song on the drum that I was honored with. Thank you, Bob. And I just want you to know that I'm only alive today and being able to be here today because there were people in my life that loved me and believed in me. And Jacques Ferdinand is one of those human beings. I offer this song. This song that I'm going to sing is a slow eagle song. If anyone knows of the eagle flies very, very high. And as the eagle flies high, myself and as I call other human beings, we offer up prayers, and those prayers get transported up through the eagle at times. So I just want to share that with you.
Away, 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 away,
So there's a program that we've designed over time, sort of the best practices program of everything we've learned in a few decades, called GRIP, G-R-I-P. And it stands for Guiding Rage into Power. Mistaking power for a rage for power is violence, right? And it has four elements to it. One is to stop your violence, also known as do no harm. Easier said than done, no? Those of you in long-term relationships are nodding your heads. Number two, developing emotional intelligence. Kind of, you know, taking what you get when you're lying on your pillow and learning how to apply it horizontally in the world of relationships. Not to be confused, those two, they're different, right? Cultivating mindfulness. We call it the mother of all interventions. Because if you know the difference between a response and a reaction, that's the difference between committing a crime or not. Very practical, right? And then lastly, to understand victim impact. So when we saved that for last, when the men have done a whole program that is very transformative, quite intense, and also creates a lot of bonding between them. And then we bring in some victims, people that are often survivors of somebody whose life was taken. And we have dialogue between these people. So they're not the actual crime-related parties. The crime's often similar, but they're surrogates, survivors. Very, very powerful. Very sacred, actually. When we start with about 30 guys and four peer facilitators. And that's a rather large group to do intense personal work. So there's quite a bit of breaking up in smaller groups. But there's also something powerful, something like a movement a little bit, to come back to the large tribe after the small groups. And we call it the tribe. The Navajos, more specifically the Diné, as my friend told me, have a saying that describes an offender in their language. And it goes as, he or she who acts as if they have no relatives. You feel the power of that?
Yeah.
In other words, if you're not bonded, if you don't experience meaningful relationship, you're not accountable. And accountability is, of course, the buzzword in the world of rehabilitation. So what we do is we create the relatives on the spot by inviting them in to become part of a tribe. Not a group, not a class, not a program, a tribe. And the first ritual is to find the name of the tribe. And the way we do that is we take the whiteboard behind us and we go around. How much time have you served? County, juvenile, federal, state, whatever. And then we add it up. So for the 34 men in my Friday class, soon to be graduating, that number was 933. So life sentence prisoners in California, on the average, have done 27 years already. You know, in Europe, 20 years is max that you could get. Right? Robin spent, what, 43, 45 years in prison. So it gets kind of quiet when that number hangs in the room. It's almost 1,000 years. And then we do a little ritual. And we say, how long were you in the moment of imminent danger? What is imminent danger? Sounds kind of Shakespearean almost. Imminent danger is abbreviated ID, meaning identify. There is a skill involved in learning to identify the moment between anger and violence, usually a rather small moment, hence the importance of identifying it before it's over. It's also the moment between craving and using. It has the same kind of speed to it. And we added one later, the moment, the difference between expectation and reality, which can also upset us greatly on an almost daily basis, right? So the three characteristics of that moment is that everything speeds up. Number two, everything intensifies. And number three, there's a moment of regret afterwards if you do not successfully ID it. And so we asked the men, 933, how long were you in that moment when you crossed the boundary? How long were you in that moment of imminent danger? And frequently it's like 5 seconds, pull the trigger. 1 minute, 5 minutes is kind of max. And then we add that up. And that moment was 47 minutes and 12 seconds. So you have 933 years, 47 minutes and 12 seconds. And it gets quiet again in the room. And so then what we do is to invite everybody to help us to never forget a moment like the ID moment again. Or if we do, to adjust as quickly as we can. And so the way we hold the man is to say that it's not like you're a bad person or a guilty forever person, but you forgot who you really were when you did what you did. And we're here to remind each other of who we really are, because that's how we're designed as human beings. We need each other. You know, it's not like you have one nervous system. You share a nervous system. So, quite a bit of time is spent getting ready. Yeah. The art of working with people, I think, is partially, but principally maybe even, in getting ready to do the work that you're going to do. So we dig the river then. And then when it feels safe, we start to explore. A lot of the assignments have to do with speaking your pain. We call it original pain. The big world speaks of trauma, but there's a slightly stigmatizing element to that. It's a medical condition, right? So we call it the original pain. Nobody gets to, you get a hand of cards, nobody gets to shuffle the deck. Have you noticed? And there you are with your hand of cards. You can run, you can hide, you can fight, you can face your hand. And are you interested not so much in winning or losing with that hand, but playing your game, discovering what your game is, the best way you know? And so the invitation then becomes to speak that pain. And we create a lifeline, a chart, wherein we chronicle that. And then there's also, like when you report, we often do that. Anybody have an imminent danger moment? Well, if you're in prison, you're likely to have one at least every week. Right? So then that gets shared. You know, how did you deal with it? What tool? there's also a sort of a tracking mechanism involved that's called Sita. S for sensations, E for emotions, T for thoughts, and A for actions. So you learn to feel, you know, where did this start? What sensation announced your experience? Then when they're not used to it in the beginning, they just want to tell the story. And then she said, and she knows when she said this, and then I, you know. So we try to tame that a little bit. Say, what are you doing in your body?
I don't know.
Well, put a hand here, put a hand here. You know, is there something? Well, it's kind of uptight. Ah, great. Breathe into that, right? Feel that, there's tightness. This is fear, this is tightness. Because then the next one is the emotion. Can you, from that orientation through the body, be informed to be in touch? That's what it's called, right? In touch with your emotions. And name that. And then, as we know from the Dharma, there is... do you enjoy this emotion? Do you not enjoy it? Or is it kind of neutral? So, a thought develops about, I don't like feeling this fear. You know, I'm getting upset. And then, what action do I want to take out of, you know, feeling this contraction in my body, becoming aware of the fear, having the thoughts about, I don't like this, this has got to end. What action do I take? So, when the men check in that full, comprehensive way, a couple of things happen, right? One is, you get in touch, and you're starting to validate an experience that has you inherently upset or off balance. So, if you learn that skill and learn how to apply it while you're having a moment of imminent danger, one of the things that happens is when you're busy tracking, you're not being violent. Given that all of this can happen very quickly, that's an important piece. But you're also learning how to validate this person, and you're learning how to track what's going on, and your uninvestigated past is no longer becoming someone else's future. Because they're there in the wrong time, in the wrong moment, and boom. And that lashing out isn't just because there's pain, but because there's isolation being in pain. Which we all suffer, you know, in different degrees of alienation in our modern lives. But that experience of, you know, learning how to show up for this being and learning how to track. So, you know, either you learn to play with it or it plays you. So, that's sort of the beginning of the whole annual journey, year-long journey. And we're about to graduate. Some of the victims we work with come to the graduation. The San Quentin choir tends to break the house down pretty well. And we have a celebration. And the men sign a pledge that they also signed when we start. Then when we start, they sign it as students. And they have a year to learn how to keep the pledge. And when we graduate, we sign it for life as peacemakers. And that then becomes the gift to the community. These men, well, we don't get to say they're going home. We're working on that one, but not yet. But we do get to say, these men are ready to go home, and they're a gift to your communities at Hunter's Point, at Bayview, in Richmond, in Oakland. Stone's throw away, right? Because they know how to hold themselves. Right? As in, holding yourself dear enough to care enough. Easier said than done. But it is a choice, by the way. gift to make. The community and the families are very moved when that happens. You can imagine 60 guys in caps and gowns holding up this pledge. I'm a peacemaker. I know how to give back to my community, the very community I took from. And so we're growing this program. We're in 5 different prisons. Against all odds, there's no red carpets for volunteers in prison. There's no linoleum either. But we're sticking with it. I just came back from a retreat where 26 colleagues that have learned how to teach this stuff came together to train with one another. Is that right, Bob?
That's right.
I got one here. So a couple of things, and then I'd love to turn it over to Robert. The program is 6, almost 7 years old. And it, like I said, it's this comprehensive offender accountability program. It's the best practices. It's done for a population you could call a life row. You know, we don't have death row in the way we used to have it, but we still have very much have life row, right? It's a forsaken population. So to bring the Dharma to a multi-ethnic incarcerated population that otherwise would have no access to it is a really beautiful thing to do. I can fall to my knees, and I do frequently, just from how precious that is and how grateful these men are. And not because it's the Dharma, we don't sell it like that, figuring we could get more buyers if we, you know, use other language. I have about 600 graduates now. 186 of them have been released by the Board of Parole hearings. 9 of them got a commutation, meaning a pardon of sorts. That includes people who have sentences like 4 lifetimes plus 20 years, which can happen. Gang enhancements, sentencing laws really need to be reviewed. And then we have 9 more that are on their way out. Only one of them came back to prison in 6 years. Cost about $75,000 to lock somebody up in your state. So take the medium 200 guys times 75 is $15 million saved. So if you can't do it for humanitarian reasons, you do it for the money, buck, your tax dollar. So we're trying to sell this idea to get it, and it's not so easy with the department because anytime $13 billion goes around, somebody's making that money, and without being cynical about it, it's become a bit of an industry, the prison industrial complex. So we're not doing the activism part, but we're just rolling up our sleeves and going into the trenches and working with these men. And that's what we're choosing to do. There's many battles to fight here, of course. Robin has been an integral part of this whole journey. He's a certified facilitator of the group program, and so we're now going back in with these men to teach their brothers and sisters what they've learned, which is really the most exciting part of it for me, right? That these gentlemen have a chance to give back like that. So Robin is particularly gifted that way, and has done the work to be able to speak about his life and what he has to give and also what he has taken. And if you're so ready, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Could you use the microphone?
Yeah, good.
That way everybody can hear. Thank you. My voice is carrying that now.
Yeah, that's kind of how it goes.
once again thank you for this privilege, because it is a privilege for me to be here among so many generous and spirited people. I don't believe that we meet one another just for chance. I believe that everything is pretty well orchestrated by the one who created us. That's my belief. As I said, my name is Robin Peacemaker Deanne, and what I'm going to share with you is my truth. And my truth is that I went to prison when I was 19 years old. 1973. I was 19. And I came to prison for first degree murder. I took the life of Mary Jocelyn Jones, a mother of two, 29 years old, with two daughters. The tragedy is, besides taking her life, I strangled her and I sexually assaulted her. And I have been, ever since that period of time, developing my amends, working on my amends. Because I not only harmed her, but I harmed so many other people that I don't know, that I've never met, but I committed crimes against. So when I say I'm fortunate and privileged to be here, I really mean that, because I'm alive today outside of a prison that I spent 45 straight years of my life in. And that place, I don't have the time to describe it to you. You've probably seen a lot of different kinds of movies and read articles, and you hear all about the prison system. But I can say this, that prison, as I know it, is a very dark, sad, depressing, violent place. And there has been many, many people that have not been able to make it to where I'm at today. Men that I've known, that I've grown with, they crossed over to the spirit world in different ways, whether it was because of their health or they decided to take their own life in a tragic way. So when it comes to human suffering, I had a glimpse of that in the prison system. And that has allowed me to value life in a much different way than I've ever valued it. So whenever I have the opportunity to share my truth, I share it on behalf of those that are not able to make it here and those that are still struggling to be here amongst free human beings. 45 years of prison, and I've been released. I was released January 11th, 2018. So I'm still learning a lot about society and the people that are out here. I have been welcomed so broadly by so many people. And the reason why I say this is because you would think that a guy after doing so much time would have more of a challenge on adjusting. But had it not been for the relationships that I built and established while I was inside, I would have been much further behind in my transitional period. While I was in prison, I had the opportunity to educate myself. I had the education of anybody that is out here in this world. And I say this because I was granted the blessing and the privilege to be able to attend 7 colleges and universities while I was inside. So I have the BA degree. I have the BA degree. I have a work on my master's degree. I'm a certified KDAC 2, which is 5,575 hours of training as a drug and alcohol counselor. I've also been working with Jacques for a number of years as a certified domestic violence and anger management facilitator, sanctioned through probation in Marin County. So I say these things because the possibility of men going inside a prison one way and coming out another in a more favorable, loving, kind, and generous way is possible. And I am part of living that peace, because I'm representing not only myself and my family, but I'm also representing the men who are still struggling to earn their way out of prison. And I say earn their way, because that is part of this process, is how do you demonstrate your redeemability, your accountability? So the GRIP program for me has allowed me to be able to articulate the process and how it's done, and to be able to demonstrate it with other prisoners, other inmates. Because this is what we do, is we model a particular behavior. And who knows you better than anyone that has lived, that lives with you 24/7, that watches you wherever you go. So once the process starts to take effect and they see changes in one, they wonder, how is this guy so balanced? How is he not the same person he was when he first came into prison? Because when I first came into prison, I was relatively violent. I was involved in gang activity. I hurt people. So the transition has been significant. And had I not made a transition, I can assure you that the governor's office during Jerry Brown's time would have not let me out of prison. I went to the parole board 21 times before I was found suitable. So that meant that I had to go in front of men that have lived out here in the law enforcement world and be assessed as if I'm a risk or I'm not a risk. But I went through that gauntlet 21 different times, and I didn't give up. That's one of the big things, is when people instill hope in you. And I say this because my mother, who is no longer with us, she crossed over to the spirit world May 3rd, 2008. She stayed with me true for 35 straight years of my incarceration. She supported me in every possible way that she could as a mother. So when I say this, I'm honoring women as I live my life. Because I've hurt women in indescribable ways by the act of sexual violence. And this has been part of who I am today. Because I recognize the tragedy, because I wouldn't want anyone to have harmed my mother or my sister the way that I harmed anybody. So I had to do a lot of learning. And a lot of that learning came from people like Jacques Rodin, the GRIP program, many of the other programs that I had immersed myself with, because I wanted to know what happened. What happened with me? How did I turn out so hard, so mean, so cruel to other human beings? And it took me decades to peel that onion, to get inside, to see what it was. What were my fears? What was I afraid of? How was I hurt when I was growing up? Mm-hmm. How was I abused? Mm-hmm. And how did that translate into my behavior when I started to grow up, when I was 19 years old? And then I started to learn and develop the science of the brain. The brain doesn't fully develop until it's 25, 26 years old. And here I was, a 19-year-old kid, putting various chemicals inside to alter my state of consciousness and my awareness and my conscience. So I had to go through all of this process in order to be where I'm at today. And today, you know, I'm happy and I'm joyous and I'm definitely free. So I can honor my truth, because when I honor my truth, I'm honoring those who I've harmed. And hopefully, prayfully, that what I share gives you something of a healing. Because for any woman that has been harmed by another man, I sincerely apologize to you for that harm.
Let's take a moment to take a minute, right? What we do in the prison a lot is we put your hand on your belly and hand on your chest. You'd like to explore that. You're invited. And take a breath. And just sort of sit with how that apology may resonate or not. Could you say it one more time?
I apologize to any woman in this room, or any woman on this earth, that has been harmed by a man through the act of violence, selfishness. I am deeply sorry. To take a moment, because there's a lot of energy in this room right now, and one of the things that I've learned while I was inside is to be able to be empathetic, to be able to feel what it must be like to be another human being, to have suffered some traumas, whether it was a childhood trauma, an adult trauma, whatever the trauma was, but that the depth of that pain. Now that pain can linger in a lifetime unless it's processed and healed. And one of the blessings that I've had while I was in the prison system is I was able to get more aware in contact with my traditional ways as a Native American. The songs, the ceremonies, to be able to understand what that represented. I practice the Native way, the Sweat Lodge ceremonies. I have the honor to be a water pourer, so I conduct ceremonies. And I say that because that has been one of the avenues that I've been able to travel upon that has helped heal me from the inside out. And one of the things that I learned in the GRIP program early on with Jacques is it's most important to be free on the inside before you get free on the outside.
Actually, the title of the course book is called Leaving Prison Before You Get Out.
So with that, I was much better equipped to come out here and to face the challenge of the new world, a new life, and a lot of people. And believe me, I don't get it. I don't have it right. I'm not perfect. And I still get sensations in my body when people honk horns that are behind us. I get, I can feel the sensations of the anger of those experiences when people feel that they were disrespected in some way, where we may have cut them off on a road, and they curse at you and they flip you off and they do these things, which I'm not equipped fully to embrace those things because I come from a different kind of environment that when those things occur, that it's like instantaneous response with self-protection, self-preservation. So in here, in this outside world, I'm still adapting to that. You know, one of the things that I really love about the GRIP program, it's complicated in ways because there's been so much depth and research and experience with putting the documentation together as a roadmap on how do you process your emotions and how do you become more empathetic of the people around you. One of the key elements for me as it's like a mantra: hurt people, and heal people. And when you hear this, it's like, it makes so much sense. Why didn't I really encapsulate that early on? Because it would have alleviated so many other challenges, which is understanding that if somebody is angry at me, if somebody comes at me a certain kind of way, that maybe they're hurting. So these are some of the things that we practice, and we continue to practice, and I practice it with Jacques for some years. To be more open, to be able to process it, and it's okay. You know, I honor my feelings now. If I want to cry, if I want to express tears, remorse, sadness, it's okay. I don't have to stuff these things in. Before, when I was growing up, the practice was to be macho, to be a man, to hold these things, and there was only certain things that I could experience outwardly. I could experience and be loud and angry, tough, But I couldn't show my emotions. I couldn't show my fear, my loving, my kindness, my generosity, my underbelly, my vulnerability. I couldn't show that. That was a foreign and alien language to me as a youthful man coming up. And then I had all of the other parameters of the world that I was living in the 50s and the 60s with what they call racism, prejudice, those kind of barriers. So it's now it's like I recognize everybody as my relative. We're all human beings. And there are certain things that connect us. The love connects us for sure, or we would not be on this earth. And then all of the other things that are connected to the love, the compassion, the generosity, the creativity, the imagination. So these are, you know, just some of the things that I've been discovering while I've been in this life. So I just want to thank each and every one of you for allowing me to share my truth with you. And it is my prayer that it's touched you in some way that has honored you as who you are and what you've experienced and gone through in your lifetime. Thank you.
I want to share with you a little hard knock wisdom. You know, we have this saying that I quoted that speaks about leaving prison before you get out. So that's an, you know, nice sounding little slogan. But then we thought, other than that, what are the criteria? Right? What do you have to do to leave prison before you get out? The practice of mindfulness allows you to deeply connect with the experience of coming home and prepares your mind and heart to be released from prison ahead of your body, although that one can follow as well. So it's not so much, you know, where I am, as in this side of the gate or that side of the gate, but perhaps more who I am that allows for my freedom to be experienced. So I'll share a few of these. It says, what are we learning about what it takes to leave prison before we get out? We are learning that the cure for the pain is in the pain, as the poet Rumi says. In healing, every wound is also a movement that cuts me open. We learn that if I don't show up for the pain of the cut, neither will I receive the blessing that comes through the opening. That makes sense. It's like you, it's not about sadism or like, you know, let's feel that pain. Right? It's more that if you're willing to feel the pain, then the opening can occur. The other one here is that we're learning that being human is having entered the contract to learn how to listen. And that learning to listen is, as Tilly says, the first duty of love, learning to listen. And it's what we're doing in this practice. And then the philosopher Heidegger, which often gets misread in the prison as Headacher, said that deep listening is the truest expression of worship. So learning these skills are very connected to becoming clear who you are. We are learning to say thank you a lot as a proven guide to find our place in the scheme of things. Try that one on. Start saying thank you a lot. See how that orients you. We are also learning to accept each person and every situation as our teacher. Finally, we're learning that love is not just a feeling, but a quality of being present. So let me check in with you. When should we finish?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock?
She's going to be reading meta cards, and then we'd ask you close with the how you did the closing the meta.
Sure. Well, let's use 5 minutes for some questions and answers. I won't forget. That's right. This book, which is really a chapter of the course book, but it got so big that we have to print it as a book as well, is for sale. It's $15. It's called Sitting in the Fire, Mindfulness for Prisoners. So if you're interested, that's available afterwards.
I'm curiously clued up, but mostly I want to say thank you. And to you too. Sort of felt everything relatively on one level or another. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome. I think we're complete on that one. Thank you, too.
One of the things that I've practiced on a regular basis is not taking things personal. And I have a job. I work in San Francisco as a team lead for an organization as a counselor. And I work with many compromised human beings. And the reason why I say this is because the judgments upon other people, I put myself in a position that I can remember where I came from. So the people that may label me as a rapist, a murderer, a violent offender, a gang member, those are labels. I don't live them because that's not who I am today. If somebody wants to know how to heal themselves from being a certain way, and as you put it, living in a prison, I've lived in a prison for a very long time. But I learned how to become free from the inside. So if anybody is open to wanting to hear the process and how that is accomplished, where you're really truly free, and you're really able to touch that childlike quality of innocence, of purity, of imagination, and creativity, I am open to sharing that with anybody. Because I will not allow other people's labels and judgments to impair my freedom.
Mm-hmm. Over there, you want to hand up?
I wanted to say thank you again, and I'm also a therapist working with people and friends of work with their help. But I did go to the county jail to do assessments, so it is really another world. And it took 2 years to be able to go in and not be in total fear, mm-hmm. just of being in dark lab.
that to be a little bold. One of the exercises we do is writing a letter of unfinished business, which if you've lived a life, period, you have unfinished business. But if you lived a life of crime, you may have some more, right? So this was written by a 21-year-old prisoner, a red-haired, wide-eyed youngster, and he was revealing his gift with language. He came up with a surprising choice for his letter. He chose to express compassion as an abandoned aspect of his soul, calling it back to himself, much like a prayer, perhaps reminding us all to do so in our own lives. My dearest compassion, whatever has happened to your luster, being once a tool of great understanding and flawless in your expression of agape love, now dead within me. Have you been hiding your face out of the fear of being hurt or rejection? You have put your trust in so many, but the great God has never forsaken you. Only have you ceased to see him when you turned away, and not you, but I, and this pains you, I know. I have allowed your death. I have killed you violently with hand and foot many a time to seek out my own selfish desires. Never coming to grips, no pun intended there. Never coming to grips with this, I have suffered many cruel days and have allowed others to suffer, sometimes being the cause. For this I am sorry, so sorry. But I'm not done with you. Many have told me to keep you 6 feet down to survive this time above, to survive this time alone. But without you, I realize I'm but a shell of a man, driven by a violent wind. I am ever put low for what I have done to you. Without you here by my side, I've gone astray, call anger, hate, jealousy, and mistrust my friends. Evil friends you used to keep at bay. Listen to me now as I call you back to life with the words of my heart. Arise from your casket, be dead, alive no longer. Awaken when this heart that you may once again set the day alive with your love and compassion. Please come back to me. I'm empty without you.